Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Concussion injuries to our children is the topic of this edition of Radio Curious as we visit with Dr. Robert Cantu, the author of Concussions and Our Kids. Dr. Robert Cantu's medical career centers on neurosurgery and sports medicine and is dedicated to addressing the concussion crisis through research, treatment, education, and prevention. Dr. Robert Cantu and I visited by phone from his office near Boston, Massachusetts, on September 24th, 2012. Dr. Bob Cantu, welcome to Radio Curious.
Hi there, Barry. Good to be aboard.
In your book, Concussions and Our Kids, I was drawn to the comment near the end where you wrote that the genetic inheritance of a child begins to control his or her athletic skills at about age 14. That caused me to think about the evolutionary influence that compels young teenagers to set their mark and establish status and belonging within their band or tribe, often through athletic prowess. In our evolutionary history, this was most likely necessary for basic survival, and now, in the 21st century, many of our children do the same thing, frequently with strong family support, yet at the same time subjecting themselves to radical injury from athletics. What would be your take on that analysis?
Well, my take on the analysis is that it doesn't wait for adolescence anymore. Parents are doing this to five-year-olds. They're putting football helmets on five-year-olds and asking them to go out there and bang heads, which to me is just insane. The premise, though, is very correct. In other words, if you start your child at a very young age with the very best of training, the very best of coaching, the very best of equipment, maybe playing it more of the year than you'd otherwise think of a season being, your kid's going to be better at that age. It isn't going to matter when he's 20. When he's 20, it's going to be what his genetic makeup is and what he is endowed with. And that's what's going to matter. And that's why you have people in the National Football League that didn't start playing football till high school, like Tom Brady. And you have people playing for the New England Patriots that didn't even play football in college, came from other sports.
You're mentioning he or the males, but equally in your book, you draw on the injuries to females, girls, volleyball as one of your prime examples, as well as hockey and lacrosse. It seems to me that that may be new territory for some people.
Well, girls are certainly athletes, every much as boys are athletes. They just have a little bit of a disadvantage in that they don't have testosterone, and therefore their muscular systems are not as strong. And since it's our neck that is going to be our shock absorber and our best part of our body to reduce our chance for having a concussion, young ladies don't have as strong a neck as guys, and their incidence of concussion in the same sports as guys play is higher, and they tend to recover a little more slowly than guys on average as well.
And that's come to light in the past, though, since the Title IX programs equalized athletics for girls and boys.
That's correct.
So let's talk about the why. The why of parents encouraging their children to be in sports, and why parents make that a real family dedicated issue. What's the social cause of that from your observation?
Well, I think it's mostly good, and I think it's mostly well-intended. And I certainly find it very positive that parents, for the most part, are interested in their kids' activities and allow them to happen. I don't think it always is perfect, though, because sometimes parents can be living through their kids the football career they never had, they are imposing on their 10-year-old, for instance. And that's got some disadvantages, for sure.
The why of where I'm going is, with what parents have, as you say, the interest in their kids and participating in their children's lives, seems to me it may be in contradiction with the physical safety of the child.
Well, it is true that the youngster, especially individuals before adolescence has been completed, are at increased risk for brain injury as compared with adults. The young individual's brain is not myelinated. The myelin is like the coating of a telephone wire. It gives strength to the nerve axons and makes them less easily injured. Our youngsters also are endowed with disproportionately large, heavy heads and weak necks, so that the same force imparted to a youngster is going to cause much more brain damage than it would in an adult if brain damage is going to be incurred.
Well, let's talk about the brain damages that youngsters suffer, starting with the sport of your choice. I know at one time it was baseball.
Well, it certainly was. In baseball, it's the head first slide that's particularly injurious, and occasionally somebody gets hit in the head with a thrown ball, but generally speaking, baseball is a relatively safe sport with regard to head trauma, and I would certainly encourage youngsters to play it. I'm a big sports advocate. I'm a big sports fan. I believe there are life lessons that can be learned through sports, and I strongly want people to play them. I just want them to play them at the youth levels without incurring the head trauma that they currently are.
Can you tell us the sports that have the greatest frequency of head trauma? Obviously, football and?
Well, right at the top with football would be soccer, surprisingly, in terms of head trauma, and ice hockey, no surprise, lacrosse, no surprise. If you call it a sport, boxing, which we certainly don't advocate for any youth, and we actually don't advocate for anybody at any age, but obviously if you're beyond the age of 18 and you want to engage in it, there's no law against it.
And then there's the damages. Different kinds of concussions when the head is struck from different directions. Could you differentiate those for us and explain the severity and the nature of the damages?
Yes, the damage from rotational accelerations, that is the spinning of the brain on your neck, the spinning of the head and the brain inside it on your neck, are greater than the stresses from purely linear, purely front to back, purely side to side accelerations imparted to the brain. And quite frankly, those rotational accelerations, helmets, do not significantly dampen. And that's why helmets will probably never, ever be the answer to the concussion crisis that's currently in football.
What is the cause of a rotational acceleration? I can understand the front to back, as in a whiplash.
Well, picture being hit on the side of the head, fairly far forward or fairly far back, or worse yet, on the side of the face mask. Your head is violently spun on your neck. And that's the rotational force that's imparted to the brain. With every single hit that's not purely right through the center of gravity of the head, you're going to have both forces imparted. But the more you get off the center of gravity, the greater the rotational forces are.
Which sports are more likely to cause the rotational acceleration?
A sport like football, where you very commonly are hit on the side of the head or on a face mask. Lacrosse is similarly the same. In boxing, it would be the left hook that would do the spinning of the head, so the hooks and are much more injurious than a straight jab, so to speak, in terms of the brain. In other sports, though, that currently don't have head protection, like female lacrosse and female ice hockey, almost all the concussions in that sport or those sports come from the stick hitting the head. And those kinds of very focal linear forces can be greatly attenuated with helmets. And if helmets were worn in those sports, there'd be almost no concussion in them.
Are they worn for male lacrosse and male ice hockey?
Yes, they are.
Why the difference?
Well, I understand where the governing bodies are coming from. I just strongly disagree. They're coming from the point that says if we put the head protection and face protection on these girls, they're going to play the sport more violently, and they're going to set themselves up for injury to other parts of the body, even though their head is now protected. I simply say no. You need to have officials officiate the sport correctly and don't allow this increased violence to happen.
What do you think is the difference between your reasoning and theirs?
Well, I think part of it is inertia. In other words, when you've been doing things for a long time a certain way, you kind of need to have something pretty big happen to make a very dramatic reversal. The majority of the people in the governing bodies obviously grew up playing these sports without head protection.
But currently we have a lot of, according to your book, injured kids.
Yes, we certainly do. And quite frankly, the numbers are probably far greater than we fully realize.
Let's go back to the rotational accelerations of the brain. What happens to the brain under those circumstances?
The brain gets stretched and twisted, and the first thing that happens is a metabolic injury, where the ionic structure of the cell membrane is disrupted, and so the cell cannot transmit impulses in a normal way. Then, if the stretching has been severe enough, there actually can be disruption of connections between nerve cells, physical disruption, things we can't see today on our current MRIs and CAT scans. But I would certainly expect within the next 5 years or less, we're going to have more sophisticated imaging that will show it.
What is the brain damage that this rotational acceleration results in?
Well, the brain damage is simply cells that are rendered temporarily or in some cases permanently injured. And depending upon what area of the brain is injured, you have different symptoms. The symptoms really fall into four big baskets very quickly. There's the cognitive basket, the part that we have trouble thinking, remembering, our attention is off, our insight and judgment is off. There's a basket that deals with sleep, sleeping more than usual, less than usual, or trouble falling asleep. There's another basket that deals with our emotions. Panic, anxiety, irritability are all commonly seen with concussion. And then the final basket is a basket that deals with somatic symptoms, such as our balance is off, our vision is off, we have headache, we have lightheadedness, we have dizziness, we have sensitivity to light, noise, etc.
I want you to tell us more about what happens to a child when they suffer the rotational acceleration brain damage. But first I want to say that in this edition of Radio Curious, we're visiting with Dr. Robert Cantu from his office near Boston, Massachusetts. He's the author of Concussions and Our Kids. His book discusses how to protect young athletes and keep sports safe. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Bob, manifestations that a child has with the damage to the brain in a sports incident, how do they affect the kid's life, school, home life, and future?
Well, it certainly depends on how severe the damage is, but it's very common for an individual, a child, after a concussion to have cognitive difficulties, difficulties with memory, difficulties with laying down new memory, like learning new materials. And so they have great difficulties in school, keeping up with their assignments and finishing them, and certainly their performance on tests often falls off quite a bit. And in fact, many individuals, we need to pull out of school or modify greatly the amount of work that they're doing in school as a result of that. It also is a tremendously stressful period for a youngster, realizing that intellectually they're not where they were, wondering when they're going to get back, and then also having the tremendous stimulus and positive influence of a sport they once were playing taken away from them as well. And so it's kind of like a double whammy.
You talk about the importance of rest, not only physical, but cognitive or use of the brain kind of rest. Would you elaborate on that for us, please?
Yes, Barry. What I want people to try to understand is that the brain is in essentially a state of metabolic crisis. It's trying to reestablish the normal equilibrium, and that takes energy. And now if you tax the brain on top of it, you run the risk of actually prolonging symptoms and even taking cells that would have survived and now causing them to die. So the worst thing you can do, especially for people with cognitive symptoms, is to be using your brain for cognitive activities. And I don't mean just doing homework, but other cognitive activities you might not be thinking about, like playing computer games, or watching TV, or reading books, recreational books. This all needs to be shut down when you're recovering from a concussion.
What is a young person to do who's used to those kinds of activities?
Unfortunately, endure a very boring period of their life because those activities must be restricted. And if they're not, the symptoms can be much more protracted before they recover.
And then you talk about repeated or secondary concussions and the problems that they cause.
Yes, each concussion is a result of the initial circumstances around it, meaning the forces that are imparted to the brain. So you can't say necessarily that a second concussion will be more severe than a first. The first may be much more severe than the second or subsequent ones. But subsequent concussions before the first one is healed will always be exponentially worse than if the brain had been totally healed.
Why?
Well, because essentially the brain is in this state of metabolic crisis, and if you now stress it again with further trauma, you've exponentially worsened the situation, and now you've caused a lot of cells to go and unfortunately probably not recover. Also, if you injure a brain that's still symptomatic from an initial head injury before it's totally healed, you run the risk of a rare, but when it happens, tragic situation called second impact syndrome, which has a very high mortality.
What are the elements of this syndrome? How is one to recognize them?
Well, it typically is an individual that is symptomatic from a head injury. Usually the symptoms have not been relayed to the coaching staff or the medical staff, so this individual is out on the field. Sometimes it's because they're symptomatic from an initial hit taken in the same contest, and now when they're subjected to an additional hit to the head, which may not be all that terribly impressive, very shortly, within a matter of a few minutes, the individual precipitously loses consciousness, becomes comatose on the field, needs respiratory support, and it's a very life-threatening situation.
It sounds awful.
It is very awful because very few people recover without some morbidity, those that do recover.
You talk about what might be characterized as a mental health circumstance by children or people with these symptoms, not necessarily the secondary concussions, but the first concussion, of being much more anxiety-laden, inducing the appearance of a different personality than the individual previously had.
Yes, that's very characteristic, and that's why we empower in the book parents to be looking for symptoms and changes in their child because they know their child better, especially the emotional makeup of their child. And it's very common after concussions that individuals may experience anxieties that they didn't otherwise have, panic attacks that they didn't otherwise have, and unfortunately, some individuals will have depression that they didn't have before, even to the point of suicidal situations.
As a way of ameliorating some of the symptoms and some of the problems, you talk about the benefits of yoga. Please share those with us.
Well, one of the things that is beneficial for individuals, especially with anxiety, panic attack type symptoms, is meditation type activities where you try to slow down your body metabolism and essentially have a more peaceful mind state, so to speak. And yoga fits right into that.
Helmets. Can you tell us the protection that helmets provide?
They don't do a lot to protect the types of forces that are involved in collision sports, where you're banging heads, because there it's mostly the rotational forces, and helmets don't do much with regard to that. Helmets do protect against skull fracture. They do protect against subdural hematoma, the intracranial bleeding, so I definitely want them worn. And I'm pleased that they're better than ever, but that better than ever also means it doesn't hit as much to hit with your head. In fact, it hardly hurts at all, and that's why individuals use their helmet so much. So it's kind of a double-edged situation. But that's not true for the type of hits where a stick is hitting you over the head or in the face. Those focal impacts, helmets do a marvelous job attenuating. And that's why we recommend that helmets be placed on girls' lacrosse and girls' field hockey.
How about helmets for bicycle riders?
Absolutely. Won't do much about concussion, but definitely prevent against skull fracture and intracranial bleeding. So I would strongly recommend their use.
They won't do much for concussion for the same reasons that we've talked about in contact sports.
Yes, your head is almost certainly not going to hit the ground perfectly in an AP or linear plane. It's going to be a tangential blow, so the rotational forces is what the brain is going to mostly see. The helmet's not going to do a great job of attenuating those, but it'll do a fabulous job of protecting you from skull fracture and intracranial injury.
So from a sociological point of view, looking at our culture, our society does a great deal to protect our children from damage. A lot of information about the problems of alcohol, of drugs that some kids find their way to, of driving safely, of being careful when you're out on the street, lauding our children to be active in this area that can be damaging to them. But still, not so much is said about safety. Do you have some thoughts about that?
Well, I'm a strong believer in sports, and I like sports to be played. I think life lessons can be learned. But I think we need to take our youngsters and have them play sports in a way that we greatly reduce the amount of head trauma that they're currently being subjected to.
So are those new kinds of sports, or is it what you have been telling us about?
Well, I think it's modifying in some cases, and in other cases, they're there. In other words, I wouldn't advocate tackle football until the age of 14, and before it, I'd advocate flag football, and I'd advocate teaching the skills of tackling, but tackle dummies. Don't bang bodies and bang heads. In soccer, I'd say play the sport, but don't have heading until you're 14. In ice hockey, I'd say play it, but no full body checking till the age of 14.
So considering the genetic development of our species, the genetic evolution of adolescents going out into the world and proving themselves, do you think that your ideas about sports would market well?
Well, I think what's going to happen is that parents have to be educated. I went to USA Football several years ago with my concerns about 5 and 6 year olds, especially playing tackle football. And they said to me, well, they'd be very happy just playing flag football. That is the leaders of USA football. But it's the parents that won't buy it. The parents want their young gladiators looking like the people that we watch Sunday night and Monday night from the NFL. So I think we have to educate the parents. And when the parents understand what they're subjecting their youngsters to, I think they'll be wanting to protect them and change will happen.
Well, Dr. Bob Cantu, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about a eureka or an aha moment that you live by or that has influenced your life?
Well, there have probably been a lot of them, but one of them clearly was when I had stepped out from behind a bus on a very busy street in Chicago and came within inches of being mowed down by a car traveling 50 miles an hour. And it would have been all my fault for not having looked and being extra conscious about what I was doing. But it really did say to me to be getting my age, you got to be lucky. Maybe there's someone else looking out for you. But for sure, try to make the most of every day.
And what would you like to do with the remainder of your precious days, the remainder of your one precious life?
Absolutely doing what I'm doing right now, advocating how to play sports safer, especially for our youth.
And finally, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners?
Well, there's a movie that's out called Head Games. It came from a book called Head Games, written by a patient of mine, Chris Nowinski. The movie is directed by Stephen James, who did Hoop Games, and I think it'll get quite a bit of hoopla before now in the Academy Awards. And I strongly recommend either the book and or both the book and the movie to anyone with an interest in this subject.
Well, Dr. Bob Cantu, author of Concussions and Our Kids, thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry.
Dr. Robert Cantu is the author of Concussions and Our Kids. His medical career centers on neurosurgery and sports medicine and is dedicated to addressing the concussion crisis through research, treatment, education, and prevention. The book he recommends, which was also made into a movie, is Head Games by Chris Nowinski. This interview was recorded on September 24th, 2012. Over 400 Radio Curious programs may be found on our website, radiocurious.org. They're free as my gift to you. I hope you enjoy them. Our address is 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, U-K-I-A-H, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541, and email is curious@radiocurious.org. Christina Onnestad is our assistant producer. I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.